Welcome back to the Resilient Futures Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Resilient Futures Podcast. Today, we have two guests from the Atlanta Regional Commission that Todd and I are super excited to be hosting today. Right, Todd?
Yes, very much.
And those two individuals are Catherine Sitch and John Phillips-Bourne. And we would love for you both to introduce yourselves a bit about how you came to be in the positions that you are in. I think you both had roundabout pathways. And I think that's most people's pathways, which is why we like exploring them here on this podcast. But could you tell us a bit about your transition to government? Catherine, could you kick us off?
Sure. I'm Catherine Sitch. I'm Deputy COO here at the Atlanta Regional Commission. So I started my career in engineering consulting. I have an undergrad in civil engineering and a master's in environmental systems engineering, and really did water work from the beginning for a consulting engineer for about 16 and a half years. And somewhere along the way, I started working as a consultant for Georgia Environmental Protection Division on their state water plan. So I was working on coastal, Altamaha, and Suwannee-Sutila water plans and just realized that water planning was the place to be. And so for all your listeners out there, they should know water planning is the place to be. And so the job opened up at Atlanta Regional Commission, and it was, you know, it was a lull in lawsuits, which is one of the things that I get to work on. And so it was a happy water planner job. And I was like, that is the job for me. What I didn't realize at the time was just how amazing it is to be in the government space and the policy space and being able to really make a difference from the Atlanta Regional Commission footprint. So I'm really lucky that I landed where I did, kind of by happenstance, kind of by career choice, but it's a good place.
Well, the short answer to how I ended up here is Catherine. She found me, and I'm so happy she did. The slightly longer answer is, I graduated from graduate school with a master's in public administration in environmental science and policy, which is as general as it is long by title, short in amount of time. And I spent two or so years working for international conservation NGOs, kind of doing climate and forestry work all over. And then worked for about 12 years at large global A&E consulting firms leading climate adaptation projects and supporting local governments and private sector and federal government, state and federal government agencies, and loved it, did good work. But when presented with an opportunity to do that same topical work that I'm passionate about for the region that I live in, and with the opportunity to not work on something and then quickly go to the next something, but really to work on what we are trying to do here in the region and continue that and follow up and then keep at it and see the progress and work toward the progress. That was such an inspiring idea that it was an opportunity I was just thrilled to jump into.
And thank you both for those descriptions of your journey. These pathways we all take professionally provide a lot of lessons and continuity. I think John actually introduced that idea without using the word continuity. But Catherine, I wanted to pose a question to you about the role, the function, the purpose of regional commissions. I had the pleasurable opportunity recently to visit with John and several colleagues at the Atlanta Regional Commission. Very stimulated by our conversation. So I think it would be good to start with a description of the role of regional commissions in Georgia and specifically what the Atlanta Regional Commission has going on.
And do, by the way, I say when I retire, I'm just going to come hang out here and go to meetings because I can just geek out and in my wonkiness. All right. So regional commissions, there are 12 regional commissions across the state of Georgia. And the goal really that regional commissions have, a primary goal, is helping local governments to develop coordinated comprehensive plans across the state. So every county can get a comprehensive plan, and we help with doing that. ARC is a little different, though, because we're also the Metropolitan Planning Organization. I'm trying very hard not to use all the acronyms and drive your listeners nuts, but it's an MPO. There are MPOs across the nation, and they are responsible for metropolitan transportation planning process. And we also have transportation dollars that flow from the federal government through GDOT to ARC and then out to build roadways across, and transit and trails across Metro Atlanta. So, like, there's the regional commission, and then there's the MPO. But then, you know, just to make things more fun and interesting, ARC has lots of different footprints and policy areas: transportation, water, natural resources, resilience, community development, research analytics, transit, aging services, workforce services, and then the real fun one, urban area security initiative. We are the UASI for Metro of Atlanta. What I love about that and what makes ARC such a great place to work is the fact that we get to deal with the policy and the interconnectedness of it all. So we're not doing only water or only transportation or, you know, any individual one of these, but instead we get to work across all of these different subject areas, which makes it particularly fun. And resilience is, of course, the binding glue for that. So it's fun to be working in the resilience space and bringing everybody to a room like you in which we can have these great conversations.
Yeah, well, thank you for that description. You used the glue metaphor. I was thinking of knitting, not because I knit personally, but it seems like there's a lot to be knit together in the scope of what the ARC does. And I know we're going to get into kind of a conversation about that a little bit later in the podcast, but thank you for that description.
Knitting is good. Glue, you know, we could probably just spend 30 minutes talking about our ways to describe how everything is interconnected.
And John, your position specifically within the Atlanta Regional Commission is fairly new. It's the Climate and Resilience Manager position. Could you describe how this came to be, this position?
Yeah, well, it truly is a dream job. And so I'm happy that the title kind of is as inclusive as it is. I think it's fair to say that this work was going on at ARC before I arrived. It may not have been called climate action or climate and resilience, but different pieces of this had been going on in fits and starts, I think, under different terms. And I'd say there's probably a few trends that that kind of swelled up to create this opportunity that I'm now in and that ARC is really kind of taking advantage of. First of all, I think there's an acknowledgement across ARC and certainly from our top executive director that climate change is having an impact on the region. We are seeing physical impacts. We are seeing people affected. It is impacting the region's infrastructure and natural resources and communities. It really is about people. So that's happening, and kind of we are recognizing that. There's also this massive energy transition that's occurring, both at the federal, state, and local level, kind of electrification of just about everything, you know, ambitions of decarbonization. And so we're acknowledging that and kind of recognizing that, that that's happening, that we need to play a role. And then there's also this kind of huge insertion of federal funding and federal attention. And so there's dedicating funding to those topics of climate resilience and energy transition, greenhouse gas emissions reduction. So that combination has really inspired ARC to get our hands around this work in a more holistic but concerted and focused effort. And that's really how I see my role, is to make sense of these different challenges, make sense of these different opportunities, connect this federal funding to our region, bring it to our region and local governments, and again, make progress on how is the region transitioning to a cleaner, more equitable, clean energy supply? How is the region and the local governments in it addressing these vulnerabilities? So in a messy nutshell, that's how I see my role.
Catherine mentioned there's a lot of different sectors within the Atlanta Regional Commission. Do you see your role, John, as cross-cutting across these sectors?
Absolutely. And I think that's, again, one of our great opportunities here. ARC is doing tremendous work across these different disciplines. I think it's probably fair to say that we are primarily known for transportation planning and water planning. But for example, you know, one of our largest, if not our largest pieces of work is our aging and independent services. And as we all know, you know, the aging population is incredibly vulnerable to climate change and extreme heat, as a specific example. So they do a regular cadence of planning. They have a network of people they support and partners they work with. How can our climate change program help integrate with what we're already doing with aging and independent services to make that community less vulnerable, make them more aware first, but then of course make them less vulnerable? ARC, as another example, is increasing its efforts in affordable housing. How, you know, are we working with that program to think through energy burden within affordable housing and kind of create more opportunities for clean and affordable energy within that community? So a lot of opportunities, definitely work to be done, and an exciting challenge, I would say.
I think that's a great segue to this broader topic of resilience. And clearly you are working this space in many ways. And I thought I might encapsulate this next discussion point in a two-part question to both you, Catherine, and John. That is, what does resilience mean to you and the work of the Atlanta Regional Commission? How do you define this? And maybe describe your approach or your evolving approach for how you're working to support or create resilience across the scope of your activity.
Well, if I take a stab at dodging a specific answer and kind of talking about something within that question that's really important, and I'll also caveat that I've been here for 7 months, so maybe an objective at end of year one is to be able to define what does resilience mean for the region.
He's going to use that forever.
Yes. At year two, at year 10. I think one of the things that's really critical for us as we think about what does resilience mean for ARC, it's to think both at a regional scale, but also what it means for the local governments within our region. And so, you know, when I'm thinking of resilience, again, it's not what is resilience, period. It's what are we looking to be resilient to? And when we think about kind of from that physical climate change, extreme weather events, clearly there are increasing flood events in the region. We have issues of drought. There's, you know, a doubling of extreme heat days by 2050s that the region's going to experience. So these are things that we are aware of and need to better prepare for and be resilient to. But we think about that at a regional level. We also need to recognize that within the region, some local governments have more resources and have been preparing more than others. And so when we think about resilience, we are also increasingly focused on those current and historically underserved communities in the region and how their opportunity to be resilient to those extreme weather events and climate change has a greater climb than other communities in the region, just because of all of these historical factors. So we are absolutely dedicated to doing the work needed to help those communities better answer that question of how they become more resilient as well.
And so building on John's answer in my own way, first I should say when I transitioned from consulting into government, I was really nervous because, you know, consulting engineers talk about government in sometimes amazing ways and sometimes less flattering ways. And I was, you know, I knew I loved the job, but I wasn't sure I would love government. And after being here for 11 plus years, it's amazing. And I am such a believer in the approach that the Atlanta Regional Commission takes at bridging that gap between local governments. And if you take water, for an example, right, like I have the luxury of being able to think about water, talk about policy, but I don't have to run a water system. I don't have to answer customer complaints, right? So it, just with that one example, it gives us this space to really think about the future and where we're headed and how to be resilient in a way that local government and local communities sometimes have to deal with the operations and the day at hand. And yet we're small enough because we have a region that we can tackle it, right? What's interesting about resilience in today's day and the place and time is everybody comes at it differently, right? And every city's in a different space and every county's in a different space. And what we're trying to do at ARC is leverage the ones that are ahead towards helping the ones that are interested, but just haven't had the space to get there yet. So we serve as that bridge between, you know, the ones that are actively, they have staff, they're doing things with the ones that just need support, but also meeting people where they are, right? And so whether it's talking about water, water supply and the future, or talking about transportation networks or trails or transits or e-bikes, which is our conversation of the day, it's all about helping local communities bridge what gaps they have and then bringing it all together in a systems kind of way.
That's right. I just want to add to that because I think it really is at the crux of a regional commission, and what we're trying to do is can a singular local government be resilient if the communities around it, if the systems that support it are not?
No.
Exactly. High five over here. And so how do you make that understandable to the local governments that yes, there are actions that they need to take because of the changes occurring, because of the things that the choices that we've previously made, but also yes, the region as a whole, and then we could certainly have a conversation about, you know, our region isn't walled off either. You know, we are dependent upon water resources from outside of the region, or that are partly, you know, from outside of the region. The transportation system goes in and out of the region. Our economy, you know, is dependent. So our approach to regional resilience is both kind of a philosophy that, you know, local governments within the region are dependent upon the region, but also recognizing that, you know, it really is a systems approach to resilience that's going to help these local governments. Not an either or, but kind of, you know, there has to be both. Sorry, the one wasn't it.
Well, that was great. Yeah. I was going to say, now John and I are going to take over your podcast and you're never going to get another question in because we're just going to...
But now we're going to ask you questions.
Like flooding, right? Flooding is a issue that's bigger than any city or county, and water crosses city and county boundaries. And we are now partnering with the Council for Quality Growth on, as I say, how do we do stormwater better? It's not about regulation. It's not about any one answer. It's about the fact that we know we have stronger storms and we're seeing flooding across the region, and what happens upstream impacts downstream. And so we have to work together both at the small scale and the large scale. And the council is an amazing partner on this. It's a long game though. Like, we're not going to fix this problem tomorrow, but the beautiful thing, as John mentioned, I think in his intro, we can keep working at things over time and not have to, like when you're a consultant, you win a job. Well, first of all, you look at a dream job and you're like, oh, that would be amazing. And then you have to still win it. And if you don't, you don't get to do it. And then when it's finished, you don't get the follow up, you know, so we get to play that long game here. I promise we'll stop talking now so that you can ask questions.
Well, the whole point of a podcast is to have your guests talk, and you guys have done a great job of that. I would say, I know I very much appreciate your answers. There are a lot of elements to this. As organizations and communities of different size and complexity to try to figure out how to address their challenges. You know, that's at the root really of our focus on and our pursuit of resilience. Continue my style metaphor a little bit more. There are a lot of threads that have to come together to weave your resilience tapestry. And every organization and community is going to have its own perspectives about what that tapestry is going to eventually look like. It's not about coming to everybody accepting the same three-line definition of resilience. That this is a lot of work, and a lot of things have to come together to make this happen. So I appreciate your nuanced response to my two-part question. Thank you very much.
I agree wholeheartedly, and you're hired. You're going to come work with us, right?
Yeah, anytime.
Related to all these different parts moving together, hopefully in some kind of concert, how do you define success?
Yeah, I think that is a great question, and one that that probably doesn't have a very straightforward answer. You know, when we're talking about energy transition and electrification of, you know, of the transportation system, there may actually be a metric that we one day want to have, you know, percent of cars, you know, but that in and of itself isn't success. You know, it also isn't maybe the end goal just to have electric vehicles, right? We're trying to also have less vehicles or, you know, more transit. So, you know, within energy transition, there are probably metrics that we are looking to get towards. Same thing within the conversation of resilience to extreme weather and climate change. We are absolutely looking to reduce the number of people impacted. We are looking to reduce the number of, you know, business disruptions, of dollars spent, you know, recovering. There isn't a singular goal or a singular kind of bar. I would say, you know, when we're thinking about regional climate action, we're looking at a horizon. We are working towards, again, all of those things that I said, bringing the region up, not just kind of some local governments, but all of them, so that they can, again, have greater access. Everyone can have greater access to clean energy, so that everyone can have, you know, clean and healthy natural resources and communities and access to green space, and, you know, not have, you know, huge energy burdens that are made worse by extreme heat. So success, I think, is going to be progress. And again, having that horizon that we're all working towards and getting closer to.
And, you know, I think part of the joy of working in the state of Georgia is we're booming, right? And so the challenges are bigger because we're booming, but it allows us the space to actually talk about implementing change in a way that if you're not booming, you don't have the funding or the resources or the conversation to be had. And so we look at it from, you know, economic development. Georgia is the number one state for business. And so you're looking at, as these companies come here and maybe as our portfolio changes of industry, how do we address making sure that we stay resilient and that we're incorporating that in our future and looking forward? It makes it fun because it's always changing. And so we're not in this static one sector world, but instead data centers, green hydrogen, all these conversations come together in a way that makes it a challenge and yet something to tackle.
Yeah, I think I would, you know, that's exactly right. And it makes me think of just how many of these things are compounding each other and, you know, kind of intersecting. So our work is quite dynamic. And, you know, while I think it's important as we think about quote unquote success of a very, very, very complex, again, dynamic challenge, you know, it's probably important to have milestones that are, you know, perhaps less exciting, but clearly showing progress. So, for example, if we all talk in a year or so, You know, maybe ARC has helped create resilience zoning policies or codes, you know, or maybe, again, our aging plans have climate change baked into them, or more local governments in the region that we support their comprehensive plans, they have climate change and resilience chapters. So success is going to be, again, kind of that horizon towards a better region. You know, our executive director is very clear on kind of having a one great region vision for everyone. And yet there are many, many, many milestones towards that for how we consider and address climate change along the way.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jonathan and Catherine. I mean, we've already discussed the fact that depending on how you want to frame it, the vulnerabilities or challenges or problems or even opportunities, those vary quite a bit across a community and across a region. And something that is generally helpful to this discussion about resilience is kind of drilling down to the project scale. So maybe if you would like to, give you an opportunity now to discuss maybe some of projects or something you'd like to highlight in respect to resilience, because your scope, your portfolio is quite diverse, you know, so how would you like to continue the conversation at that kind of scale, at the individual kind of project or problem scale?
So
do one and I'll take another.
Or I'll do them all and then
you
can
all,
one.
I'll do more.
Yeah. It is, it's an interesting thing. John mentioned that we've been in this space for a long time, right? So now we get to both do new work that we're getting funding from the federal government or from other sources, but also like claim others' work that's been going on for a while in the transportation sector and just roll it into their resilience. So we're working on charging and fueling infrastructure, which is looking at EV networks across the region and where we need to have EVs and then actually constructing them, EV chargers, sorry. Regional electrification plans that talk about where, again, where do we need to have electric vehicles and what do local communities need to think about? And this is, I think, an ARC specialty is looking at something from a regional perspective that every city and county doesn't need to do alone. And then working with them on here's what we see for the future of EVs and chargers and such. But then everything from an EPA priority climate action plan, which has been a fun run of a crazy schedule to meet EPA deadlines that leads to grant making that maybe John can talk about. And working with Georgia Tech and our university partners on Energy Shed, which is a concocted word based on watershed, because we know that, you know, water isn't in a specific city or county, and energy even more so crosses bigger boundaries, and we get power from Alabama into Georgia, and how do you work it all, and Mississippi, how do you work it all together? I think the key thing to know is because we have all these different individual projects going on, what our role is for me and for John is to bring people into a room and talk about the interconnections so that as we're doing the Energy Shed work with Georgia Tech, we're building from what we've learned from the EV planning or even freight planning and how we move freight across Georgia. It all kind of comes together in a way that without all those individual conversations, we wouldn't have the opportunity to bridge those gaps.
Yeah. I would say, and I'll mention a couple specifics, but just to further on what Catherine's saying, I mean, we're doing maybe like 7 or 8 related under this climate and resilience banner, regional planning initiatives. And getting back to where I started, one of the really important things is that those plans are going to lead to recommendations and suggested next steps and our opportunity to, you know, as Catherine mentioned, do the region's first ever climate action plan that identifies greenhouse gas reduction opportunities across the region. That's going to not just be a plan that is a, well, this is fun and interesting and good bedtime reading, but this is giving us the framework to actually see and implement emissions reductions for local governments to do so across the region. So that's a super exciting and important piece of our portfolio right now, because it's really setting the ground for work to come. We were a recent recipient of a federal highway grant called PROTECT, which is an acronym that I won't even pretend to try to get at, but essentially it's going to look at stormwater flooding and even some extreme heat vulnerabilities for the region's transportation infrastructure, key corridors and mobility hubs. And so that, again, it's kind of at a regional level, but identifying those hotspots and of vulnerability and what to do about them. And then we're doing some really awesome trail connectivity in a really important part of the region south of I-20, helping communities increase their connectivity and increase their options for bike and pedestrian walking. There's a lot going on.
The trail on the south side is a fun one. We call it the Flint River Trail. The Flint River, of course, in Georgia, in which it starts underneath Hartsfield Airport and travels south to the Florida border through our ag country. But that part of Metro Atlanta has been disconnected by 85, 75, 285, the Hartsfield Airport to begin with. And much of the community can't get to the airport in any reliable way. And so we have some federal funding that was just announced to the tune of $50 million to bring a path there to connect the Atlanta Beltline down to the Flint River Trail, which doesn't exist yet, but will. And then you take that, and the city of Atlanta has an e-bike rebate program that ARC is running for them, where disadvantaged community can get an e-bike. And suddenly you just change the way we commute in Metro Atlanta. And I've been paying attention to the number of bikes on the road here and e-bikes. And suddenly, like, when you start doing something, you know how you like trigger into seeing it in the world, and you're like, oh, that person has an e-bike. And you can just see a future that is decidedly different.
This trail project or project to be also, to me, really emphasizes the potential multitude of benefits that can come from such a trail system. You know, this is in communities where the health outcomes are the worst, and so it's opening up opportunities for them. It's in communities where, closer to the city, you know, extreme heat is going to be the most impactful. It's creating more tree canopy and green space. You know, it's helping address kind of pollution into the Flint River. It's also helping reduce flooding at key points of the Flint River, kind of in the more metro areas. So there's just so many benefits that are going to come from this. And ARC really helped bring a whole bunch of partners. And again, kind of what we were saying, kind of connect federal opportunities here to the region and to local governments and local communities.
So you asked us how we define resilience. And I think you're getting a piece of that answer, right, in retrospect. It's floods and droughts and wildfire and heat island and trails. And like, it's just all of the above, right? It's fun.
And it's also, as you pointed out, Todd, it is different in every community, right? The answer to, you know, what do you need to be resilient to? And then what does that look like and how do you achieve it is different across our communities, but there is that roll-up regional answer as well.
And also the words are different in each community, and we have to recognize that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Thanks for that answer. Your all's description of the trails, and you mentioned the airport at the same time, reminded me of a funny story that I got into with a colleague in the Netherlands one day when he was describing his experience when he decided he was going to ride his bike to the Rotterdam airport to catch a flight. Mm-hmm. And how much confusion he created at the airport when he asked them where he could park his bike, mm-hmm, before he caught his plane. So I now I'm seeing a future where people are riding their bikes to to the airport in Atlanta. Wouldn't that be something?
It is very real, and we'll get there, like the Bell Line to the Flat River Trail to the airport. Except I should caveat for listeners: the intersection with the airport is either at MARTA station or there's that rental car train that goes from the airport to the conference center to the rental car center, and the intersection is at that conference center, right? So you're going to park your bike one short train stop away.
There you go.
It is exactly those kinds of opportunities and that vision. You know, that's not today's Atlanta, but that is a possibility. And that is a way, you know, it's one of many ways that the region could be a better place for many.
So thinking about, I think you were just alluding to a lot of this, is how, so you're working with a lot of local communities. How do you bring that theme of resilience to the forefront, make it something somebody cares about? And you were just relating it back to pretty much how somebody experiences their day-to-day in their community. Is there going to be less heat effect because now you have tree canopy above you? Are you able to access the places that you want to access now because there is this trail? But I guess I wanted to open the floor for how you engage with communities and really encourage action on resilience in those spaces.
Well, I think Catherine has touched a bit upon it with kind of the concept of meeting people where they are. And we work with local governments, but we also work with kind of, you know, the regional chamber of commerce. We work with counties as well as small cities. We work with the business community. And everyone is going to be impacted in some way. Some more so than others, some kind of more from like an asset perspective, some more from a health perspective, some from an economic perspective, some from all of those. And so finding the ways to talk to people where they are about the issues that are going to matter to them and how climate change and extreme weather events are disrupting that or influencing that. And I think we've had some success. I think the Council for Quality Growth and meeting the business community about why increased stormwater events are a challenge to them. You know, meeting people around water and helping people understand how water is so critical and why they need to think kind of in a bigger picture. Helping connect kind of climate change and health impacts and outcomes. So these are helping understand that people love trails and that trails are part of these broader solutions. So we have a number of different tools. I always go back to the aging community because that's already such an important group that we work with and helping them understand. I mean, climate change might not be the first thing that they're thinking about, but, you know, they need to understand how extreme weather events are going to potentially impact them. So we have to find the ways to talk with people about the things that are going to matter to them. So that they understand the why and then the what they need to do.
So I think John mentioned he's been here 7 months. He showed me with his fingers. We've been at this work, 7 syllables. Now we're fast forwarding to a haiku. We've been at this work for a long time, but our work really geared towards resilience. Even though, you know, there are pieces of it all along the way, including green communities, where we help local cities and counties become more resilient, and we award them for that. It's really 7 months, 12 months that we've been like dedicated, right, full time to this effort. And one of the things we're hearing from our local elected officials is, how do we tell this story to our community? So part of ARC's role is to help pull the data together, pull the research together, and listen to what they need in order to help them communicate it. So it's like that leverage effect. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to me how uniformly we hear that from our local governments, which that in turn drives what we do, right? So then we have this feedback loop to help.
That's right. It's not just providing kind of like funding, although that's helpful. It's not just creating like physical implemented solutions, although that's helpful and needed as well. It's literally helping these elected officials talk with their constituents about these issues. And how do you support them in their communications? And how do you support local governments with like administrative capacity, like, you know, the staff, the grant writing, you know, all of these different things.
that are important to supporting progress on this?
You guys have done a great job in our conversation here. I think revealing what an exciting time this is for people and for our communities to be able to support, you know, resilience and the well-being of people in our communities through these efforts and the various dimensions of it, because they're social as well as environmental, ecological, as well as technological elements of this, you know, approaching well-being of people and communities from a system point of view, because there are all these threads that come together and need to be weaved together to create this resilience tapestry. Well, and I'm also impressed of how much work I think the ARC is doing. From what I can gather, there are a lot of resources, but the translation of that would be money, funding, that you all are touching or serving as a conduit for in Atlanta. But what would be maybe your kind of advice to others based on what you've learned so far on how organizations that have missions similar to yours could approach this, how they could advocate and support resilience?
So I think it starts with listening. We've been very intentional at talking to our local governments and talking to our communities and seeing what they want, and not, you know, regionalists can come in and say, oh, here is the answer. But what we're trying very hard to do is to listen to what people need and then fill that gap. So my advice to people always starts with that listening aspect so that you can really meet people where they are and make a difference that way.
Yeah, I like that. I'll take kind of an approach and kind of summarize some of the things that I've been saying. When I worked in consulting, and I feel like I've seen it here, one, it's too easy just to say there's more money available than ever before to address these issues. And we know empirically that just having the funding available doesn't get it to the local governments that need it the most. And so, you know, you have to find ways to bridge that gap. You know, so a regional commission's a regional planning organization's opportunity to go work with those local governments and help them write the grants, help them figure out what they're going to do if they win the grants. That's so needed. And then this concept of administrative capacity, which I'll just keep coming back to. You know, local governments are vulnerable. And by just understanding vulnerabilities, and again, even just by bringing funding to them, you're not necessarily setting them up to address these issues. You have to find ways to have these topics of resilience and climate action work across departments. You don't necessarily have to have a climate and resilience manager, but someone needs to help own these topics and then work across departments and help build that capacity internally. So that kind of softer side, but slower kind of work is just so important. We see it time and again, and there's a need to kind of help build that capacity.
Thank you for that answer. There's so much, as you point out, both of you, so much involved in supporting success for communities and local government and their partners and stakeholders. And it's about so much more than providing funds or best of funds. There's so much more involved in creating successful efforts and resilience. Thank you.
I think you've hit on something there, because the other thing we strive to do is develop partnerships. Right. So it's not just ARC or a local city or county, but the universities or the NGOs or the state government. Like, we look for those places where we can leverage and bring people together. And it's one of the things we're known for.
That is a great part of the answer to your question.
Well, we're going to add one more thing to your all's CV, and that is going to be poets.
I thought that you were about to announce Fine, the poet thing we'll have to do for today.
I look forward to on the resume, but you can't create a resume because that would mean you need a resume.
That's true, too.
You can add it to your LinkedIn.
There we go. There we go. There.
So I know you have each created a haiku or a poem.
Don's still counting. So
well,
it's either
I'm
going to
go first
or
because
poem.
I'm just so curious if this is going to work. And I wonder if I have to say it's syllable correct, or I'm just going to let you all do that. Disasters happen. Our choices influence the impact. Future is open.
I love it.
Did that work?
I love the pace at which you said it. It's like you were questioning your haiku from beginning to end.
I feel like with syllables, one must enunciate, but I'm not sure my enunciation made the syllables work.
This is a Chicago fellow
and an
English maker, obviously overthinking haikus.
Did overthink it a bit.
Uh-huh.
Well, hold on. Did it work?
Olivia in the chat says it was great.
All right.
The message was amazing.
Catherine's going to show me how it's done.
Okay. On full disclosure, I changed this during the course of the podcast. So if my syllables are wrong, I blame the fact that I'm working on the fly. Atlanta's future, knitting our resilience, bridges to new paths. In all seriousness, we also do the arts here at ARC weave the arts into our programming because you can connect with people that way. And so see,
Catherine and I now have a next meeting that we're going to do impromptu, go to that group and give them our haikus.
Well, let me just say that you guys have been delightful guests and Catherine and John need to go on the road. I think you guys can sell some tickets.
Yeah, good idea.
Next career.
Yes.
Resilience comedy show.
That's true. Although there is no money to be made there. But if it's good for the region, we'll consider it.
There we go. On the bed.
Well, thank you both so much. And thank you for creating your own haikus from scratch.
Thank you for calling them haikus.
Thank you both so much for having us. This has been fun. It's the highlight of the month, and it's May 1st.
There you go. Highlight of the month.
Well, we appreciate that accolade as well.